From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made last Wednesday, June 4th, when 16 mayors united to fight against so-called zombie properties. The group of mayors included Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren. They signed a letter endorsing a bill from State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman that would require banks to maintain properties that have been abandoned by occupants but haven't yet been foreclosed upon. The issue is blight, and the impact is on neighborhoods. And right about the time that the mayors were pushing this bill, a rather high-profile abandoned house hit the news. Assemblyman David Gant admitted that he had given up on a house in Rochester. He had stopped paying taxes. He wanted the city to handle it, even if that means knocking it down. Mr. Gant said he had tried to rehab the property, but vandals continued to come after it. The city of Rochester has said that Assemblyman Gant's house is not a zombie property. His house has caused us to think a little more critically about abandoned homes, though, and what to do about it. And joining us for the hour is Del Smith, the City of Rochester's Commissioner of the Department of Neighborhood and Business Development. Del, nice to see you again.
Yeah, good to see you, Evan.
Mary Coffey's here. She is with the North Winton Village Association. Mary, nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Dave Andriotta is here, a reporter and columnist with the Democrat and Chronicle. Dave, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
Let's start with Del Smith, and we want to understand what a zombie property is. First of all, what's the definition of a zombie property, Del?
What we mean by a zombie property is a residential property where the tenant has vacated the property, but it has not been officially foreclosed on by the mortgage lender. And so it's in a state to where there's no clear owner, right, because you don't have a tenant, but yet the banks are saying at that point in time, we don't officially possess the property to be responsible for upkeep of it.
So in terms of the bill that we're talking about with the Attorney General, that's sort of the legal definition of what we're working with here.
That is correct. And what the bill is trying to do is say to a bank that instead of waiting until the foreclosure process is completely done and it's been signed off by a judge, that at the very least, at the beginning of the foreclosure process, the bank should be responsible for the upkeep of the property.
We did contact Assemblyman Gant's office. He has not responded. I know he's been in Albany and traveling. Asked him to either join us on the program or on the phone for a few minutes yesterday or today, and again, received no response from his office. But, Del, you say that essentially David Gant's property does not fall into this category of zombie properties. Is that right?
The specifics about zombie properties would state that the owner has vacated the property and ceased to pay the mortgage lender, and the mortgage lender has started a foreclosure process. I'm not privy to the specifics of the property against property in terms of has the bank started a foreclosure process, but in terms of zombie properties, it really is related to the banks who hold the mortgage on the property.
So technically, he's not in that category, but we did see a column from Dave Andriotta this weekend about Mr. Gant's property, and in fact, Dave went out to the house with a lawnmower. The columns gained quite a lot of traction, and it included a video clip. So let's go ahead and listen, if we could, to this clip from Dave Andriotta's column.
House behind me used to belong to State Assemblyman David Gant. He stopped paying taxes on it so he could dump it on the city. Now it's our problem. So I figured since it's our problem, I'd do something about it. I'm going to mow Gant's lawn. Unlike most of his constituents, Gant let his lawn grow like a cornfield. So you're going to want to adjust the height setting on your lawnmower. Now, I can't do that on mine because I can't afford such a lawnmower. I don't make as much money as a state assemblyman. Then, start mowing. And daydream of how liberating it would be to walk away from it all, just like Assemblyman David Gant.
All right, Dave, the city has said Assemblyman Gant is not in that zombie property category, and he has said he tried here. So are you being hard on him?
Oh, I don't think so. Look, this is a politician who has done a lot for his constituents in his legislative district, but one who also proclaims to love his neighborhood, love his district, and fight for the people there. And what we've seen and that he's admitted to is he up and walked away from the property. This isn't just about and so the city ultimately foreclosed on his property for not paying the property tax. And this, to me, wasn't an issue of not paying property taxes. There are thousands of people, tens of thousands, I don't know the number, around Monroe County, both in the city and in the suburbs, who people who fall behind on their property taxes. Property taxes being what they are, it's not an unusual thing, and I can understand how it happens. This goes beyond him not willing to pay the taxes. He let the property go. And when I say go, I mean it was a full-blown blight. I mean, graffiti, broken windows, boarded up doors, grass that grows like a cornfield. And I'm not sure that there's that that's excusable in this case, particularly for someone of his standing.
But he said, and he told you, and you included this portion in your column, that he had put in new appliances. He'd put in – he essentially tried to do the kind of interior rehab that you would do if you were either trying to get renters or to prepare it for sale. And every time that happens, the vandals show up. They rip the copper out. They take it apart. And he said, are you going to keep throwing good money after bad? And that's where a lot of people will say, okay, I get it. You know, I mean, he's tried. And you're saying there's still something missing.
Yeah, I say there's something missing. I mean, I would ask how come the vandals haven't hit up the neighbors? How, and in some cases, they have other abandoned properties on that street. But that's the key. It's the abandoned properties. It's not the properties of the people who are still living there. If you could get someone into that house, and Assemblyman Gant, you know, I'm not privy to all of his personal finances, but I know he makes a decent living as an assemblyman. He's also collecting a pension. He owns several properties around Rochester. He's a man of the community, a man about town. I have to believe that he has the means to spruce up the house enough to either find a tenant or at least unload it rather than just walking away.
John Greenbaum of Metro Justice tweeted last night, wow, that lawn mowing stunt was low. White suburbanite shows up black landlord. Very Geraldo Rivera of you. What do you think about that?
I retweeted it.
I know you did. And I give you credit for that because I think that, you know, I mean, you're open to the criticism. And being a columnist now, as you are with the Democrat and Chronicle, you're going to hear it from all sides. What do you think about that specific comment?
I think it was out of line. I mean, this was not about a white boy from the as I've been called in some of the criticism, a white boy from the suburbs trying to show up a black assemblyman. Race has nothing to do with this. This is about blight in the city that I love. I don't live in the city, but like other people who live on the outskirts, I consider Rochester home. You know, maybe this is an outsider's point of view. I grew up outside of Toronto. I moved to Rochester about 6 years ago with a brief hiatus. I've been here ever since. And when people ask me where I live, I say Rochester. Yeah. I don't say Fairport. I think locals, people who have been here their entire lives, might delineate between the different towns. But to me, I say Rochester. And I think we're kidding ourselves if we think that this county or this region is going to make it without its major metropolitan metropolitan cities being successful.
So essentially, just because you live in the suburbs doesn't mean you should just say, I live in Fairport, I don't care about Rochester.
Correct. And it was, you know, the stunt, and that's, you know, what it was. I mean, some people have thanked me for my altruism. I mean, this is not exactly altruism. I mean, altruism is doing something for the public good or the good of someone without expecting anything in return. I mean, I was getting a column out of this. I understood what I was doing, and the point was to shame a politician that I felt had no business doing what he was doing. And hopefully, if it can act as a deterrent to other people walking away from their properties and raise the issue of neighborhood blight and what it does to a neighborhood, then all the better.
Okay. Well, and by the way, this is a tangent, but I'm not even sure definitionally altruism is possible. But anyway, that's a whole other hour on a different day.
Fair enough.
Mary Coffey is here from the North Winton Village Association, and this is an issue that Mary has followed for years, and I know you've been concerned about for years, Mary. What do you make of what the mayors are saying? Lovely Warren with 15 other mayors are saying, yes, let's get this bill done. Let's start targeting zombie properties.
I think it's wonderful. And I think it's one part of the equation. And that part of the equation are those zombie properties that are owned by the banks or in between transition, and it should be done. What we have and why North Winton Village has not had a house ripped down or torn down is because the community of all volunteers, there's no money being paid anybody in this neighborhood, have for years code violated and handed into our code offices, our net offices, to clean up our area and not let it go into blight. And it hasn't been easy. It's been a fight. You know, we have fought to make sure that these blighted houses were taken care of, and they have been. And people have moved into the neighborhood, and people are maintaining their properties. So we did it as volunteers, fighting 24/7 with the city to make sure code was taken care of. So when these houses go, and then all of a sudden they abandon them, why weren't they coded right from the very beginning? So these houses weren't into shreds. Why weren't they coded right from the beginning? And then they could have been sold. And sold to people at a cheaper price that might have an opportunity to own a home. So I think the city, no matter who they are, and this isn't the first politician that has been able to get away with what is happening now.
You're talking about Assemblyman Gant.
Yes, and Bill Collins from Maplewood went and spoke to our city council, I think last year, about a situation in Maplewood with another city employee that owned homes that were deteriorating and they weren't being coded. We have a new with Del Smith. We have someone new, and I think has a good conscience that maybe we will start seeing some changes. But we cannot allow this to happen. Our city's a mess. Not only that, people, human beings, live in these houses, and that is. Where are the consciences of the people who have let these run down and then collect money from rent from these people? Some of it government money. So I say go for it and stand up. And I'm proud of the Democrat and Chronicle and WXXI for standing up and taking a stand. And I hope you don't let go of it, gentlemen.
We haven't even mentioned the number, and I see the phone's lighting up. If you do want to join the conversation in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994, or toll free no matter where you are. I was going to say 585. It is, hold on. It's 844-295-TALK. That's what it is. It's 844-295-8255. Let's grab Sue in Fairport. She's been waiting. Go ahead, Sue.
Hi. This is a bit off topic, but I don't think so all around. You know, you've had Bill Nojay on like there was no other Republican you could use as a spokesperson. Now you're bad-mouthing Mr. Gant with no balance. And all the while, using my money to do it. And I mind a lot.
Sue, I'm confused here. I think she hung up. I'm confused about this, I confess. I mean, as the host, I do try to provide balance. We said that we invited Mr. Gant on. Be happy to have Mr. Gant talk about it. But we're not just talking about Mr. Gant's house. In fact, we're stressing that the city is saying David Gant is not in the zombie property category. Yes, Dave Andrietta is saying that that doesn't make it right, what he's done. But if he wants to come on, he has an open door here. And Dave, I suspect that the Democrat and Chronicle, you feel the same way?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I reached out to David Gant for the column. I included his comments. I spoke with neighbors. I included one of those neighbors into that column, a neighbor who, by the way, had defended what he had done. And as always, I'm willing to sit down with him anytime.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of Republicans we've had on the show. First, this is strange. We're not going to do a laundry list of guests here, but we've had Joe Robach and Brian Cole, the Assembly Minority Leader, and Bill Nojay and Bill Ryalick and on and on it goes. Mark Cassini running for Congress. So anyway, that's. I apologize, Sue, but I don't think we have actually much to apologize for on that score. All right, let's grab Chris in Rochester. Thanks for calling, Chris. Go ahead.
Question about some of these properties. I used to live down near Letchworth, and there were people and companies that would come into, you know, an abandoned building or property, and if you wanted to get rid of it, they would literally tear it down, you know, piece by piece. Take it away, no cost to you, they get the materials. What I'm wondering is, in the city, we have a lot of older homes in nice shape, and I know a lot of people that would like to be able to have some of the fixtures. Is there any way some arrangement like that could potentially work, where an abandoned property or foreclosed, you know, could be effectively stripped of some of the stuff?
Del?
Yeah, so we have a great organization that the city works very closely with called Home Rochester. And Home Rochester, their primary mission is to to rehab and address properties, residential properties in the city. And so what I'd encourage the caller to do if there's an interest there is to contact Home Rochester and to tap in some of the many programs that they have to do some of the things that he's actually talking about.
And Dave, have you covered that as well? I saw you sort of reacting a little bit there when he was calling.
Yeah, I have done a few stories here and there. I know that Home Rochester has rehabbed hundreds of homes in the city. And what's interesting about it too, and this was actually the basis of a report that I was working on that I ended up not doing, and I'll tell you the reasons why, is that Home Rochester often will spend much more on rehabbing the house than it actually sells the house for. And at first that struck me as counterintuitive. You're going to sink $100,000 into a house and sell it for $80,000. And I asked around to a lot of trusted colleagues, not just at the Democrat and Chronicle, but elsewhere, as to whether this made sense to them and whether this was a story, you know, an investigative expose, if you will. And the answer was almost resoundingly no. This is the price of sprucing up a neighborhood. Sometimes you have to take a loss. It's like a park. Do you make money on a park? No. But is it a good thing to have in a neighborhood? Does it provide balance? Does it provide recreation? Yes. And so you have to do those things. And I applaud Home Rochester for what it does. I'd hate to see it go crazy and overboard, but it doesn't appear to be doing that at this point.
Yeah, that makes sense. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I just wondered, is there a number you can give us to call them or whatever?
This is Dell. I don't have a number off the top of my head, Chris, but if you kind of just go to Google and type in Home Rochester.
Yeah, get in touch with the city. They'll put you in touch with that. And thanks for calling, Chris. Dell, what Dave is saying about Home Rochester, is that roughly fair?
That is very fair. And what happens is that the city will actually subsidize the difference in the housing price. Of course, these are funds that we receive from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, who understands this issue that we cannot have properties that are continually abandoned and going down. So, you know, we receive funds to subsidize that. Home Rochester does an exceptional job of rehabbing these properties, and we cover the difference. And what you find is that we have families that are able to move into these homes, and they're able to have a good environment to raise a family and to contribute positively to the neighborhood and to increase the home prices, which in turn, you know, helps the city as a whole.
How do you decide with a lot to either raise a property and make it green space versus to rehab and spend that money to do it?
Well, part of it depends on the specific area. So, for example, if there's a large development project that would take place or that we're looking to take place, that we would replace some more blighted properties with mixed-use residential property units, we may look at actually demolishing that property or those set of properties in that case. But it's a case-by-case basis. A lot of times we'll look at the home and see what type of work is required to go into it. If we can renovate it, that's the better approach. But if not, we demolish it. But what you don't want to have, and many people know this when you drive around the city and you see lots with the poles that are sticking in the corners that kind of represent that this is a city-owned lot that is vacant. You don't want too many of those around as well.
Yeah, if you're just joining us, we're talking about zombie properties. Last week, 16 mayors, including Lovely Warren of Rochester, united. They sent a letter of support endorsing a bill from State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman that would require banks to maintain properties that have been abandoned by the occupants but haven't yet been foreclosed upon. I think we've got 8 days now left in the session. And I say 8 days, not even 8 working days left in the session. We'll see if it passes. I know there's a sort of a movement to get that done. Go ahead, Mary.
And I asked Dell before we started here, we are number 2 in poverty rating in?
They say 3 now, but that's according to a new study last week.
Yeah.
So, and I asked Dell, I said, Dell, being on that level, do we get a lot of grant money into the city because of our poverty level? And is it a way of the city of Rochester to be making some money? I mean, it's not nice to say, but we are making money because of our poverty level. And should we, as a city, be looking at where this money is going, because it doesn't seem to be raising the level of and the quality of life of our people in the city of Rochester who are in poverty. I mean, we had spoken, and one of the examples, and when Dell first came in, we said to drive down East Main Street from one neighborhood of volunteers into another neighborhood that received tons of money in this focus investment monies, and to see the blight in that neighborhood. I think it would behoove the city to say, all right, we got money coming in for poverty because of our poverty lever. Are we raising the quality of life? Where's this money going, and how is it being spent? And I think it's time the city, and I think we have a very bright man with Dell, is start looking at this and start making our better life for our citizens.
Back to the phones in a second, but Mary, to the point about making money on poverty, I understand the way you're framing it, but I think everybody agrees that the sooner we change the poverty situation,
absolutely,
better for everybody. And I don't think anybody in the city administration would argue otherwise.
No. But how are they using it so the poverty level is going up instead of going lower and lower, that we have more and more poverty? That money is for people to raise their quality of life and to raise them out of the poverty level. And we got to see how that's being spent and if it's being spent correctly. So I think the city's got to take a wide, wide look at how the nonprofits are doing with this money.
You're hearing the voice of Mary Coffey from the North Winton Village Association. Dave Andrietta is here, a reporter and columnist with the Democrat and Chronicle. Dell Smith is here. He is the City of Rochester's Commissioner of the Department of Neighborhood and Business Development. Let's grab Don in Rochester. Thanks for calling Connections, Don.
Hi. I happen to agree with John Greenbaum. I think this whole thing is an attack on Assemblyman Gant, because Mr. Gant doesn't play ball. He doesn't talk to you guys. You know, and he makes him an easy target because he fights for the poor. So now you can say, oh, David Gant, who fights for the poor, now he's not taking care of a neighborhood. And to try to blame him for whatever blight exists on Central Park is ridiculous. He has other properties. Obviously, they're well maintained. They're well taken care of. But his story, to me, seems plausible. And when Mr. Smith is telling you that his property does not qualify as a zombie property, and you somehow try to take him and latch him onto the story about zombie properties, this is really just to get him in the story to make an attack on him. And if you want to talk about zombie properties, what needs to be done about them, focus on that, deal with that, and get him out of this conversation. Yeah, this has nothing to do with it. The prices are filed, they foreclosed on his house. He says he opened the house to the city, and they didn't take it.
They foreclosed, Don, because he walked away.
No, but he
walked
told
away.
He offered the house to them first.
Right, and the city didn't want it.
The money in the house. Hold on.
It was such a hunk of junk. The city didn't want it.
And they kept breaking in the house and taking the stuff out of it. That's what he said.
That's what he claims. Yes.
And so, based on the history of his other properties, his explanation is plausible because he has not. None of his other properties are in bad shape. Are they?
I've not looked at all of his other properties. I don't know, but I know about this one.
I know you don't know because it wasn't about the truth. It wasn't about trying to figure out whether what he said was true or not. It was about making him look bad.
Well, I don't think it was about making him look bad. Okay.
I'm sure it was.
Mr. Gannon stood up for
poor people and black people in this community for over 50 years.
Oh, I'm sure he has.
Hold on. And his record is pristine in that area. So what you're trying to do is try to make him look like a hypocrite by saying that, look. See, now the same David Gant is the champion of poor people. Now he's even an abandoned house in a poor neighborhood.
Don, he made himself look like a hypocrite. He walked
away
from his house.
No, he's not making him look like a hypocrite because he was straightforward about the process from the beginning. And the people in the city administration know that.
Well, I want to get back to your point earlier about trying to make it look like a zombie property. No one claimed, certainly not in my column, was it claimed to be a zombie property. As a matter of fact, just so you can better understand how the column came to be, The column was an outgrowth of a news story that actually first appeared on Channel 13.
Yeah, my former colleague Sean Carroll, I think, was the one who broke that story.
That's right. Mm-hmm. He did a nice job with it. So I believe that broke, I want to say, either Sunday or Monday of last week. And I saw in it an opportunity to raise this issue. And frankly, as I said earlier, to shame a politician who proclaims to care about his legislative district, who in turn walked away from a house and contributed to to blight in the neighborhood.
There you go. There you go. Claims to. He's proven that he cares. You're trying to call him a hypocrite.
He is.
About a white person from the suburbs saying that he's a hypocrite. He's proven that he cares about his community.
Don, are you going to turn this into a race issue?
This one issue does not negate everything he's done. Everything he's done for the city. And what you're trying to say is that he claims that this is your words. He claims to care about his community. But he's proven that. It's not just a claim with him. You are. This is what you're about.
Why are you
cutting grass on a house that the city owns?
Now, Don, hold on one second.
Mr. Gass still owns it when it's clear that the city owns out.
Now, Don, hold on one second.
You're not saving him because he doesn't own the house anymore.
Don, please let the host jump in and ask you a question, because I think you're making an impassioned point that says David Gantt's record. You're saying it stands for itself, okay? And we're hearing that. Is there anything? Whether it's David Gantt or Louise Slaughter, maybe Tom Reed, pick a politician that you think has a record that is admirable. Is there anything they can do that would draw the public opprobrium? Is there anything that they could do that would be appropriately criticizable?
Yes, but I think the story is run. I think the story is run its course. I think now it's just a bunch of piling on. Look, the city has a process. If you don't pay your taxes up, you're probably the foreclosure one. The process worked. It'll be different if somehow he didn't pay his taxes and he's still allowed to keep the house. The process worked the way it's supposed to. So I don't see what the story is. It's particularly when his history is far surpasses this one issue. This is ridiculous. It's just being carried on by people who don't like him.
All right, Don, I do appreciate the call, and I wanted to make sure you got your extended points in. I know Mary wants to jump in. Go ahead, Mary.
Yes. First of all, shame on Mr. Greenbaum making this a racial issue. We're in trouble. We are in big trouble in the city of Rochester. Our crime rate, our housing, our people are in trouble. And every race, color, and creed should join together to turn this around. And this is the only way it's going to work. And if you go to City Hall in meetings, there are people of every race, color, and creed working together to try to save this city. So stop with the racial, and let's turn the city of Rochester around.
Okay, before I get the shortest break in radio, and Dave, a last word. Look, Don's point is he appreciates Mr. Gantt's record, and that he thinks you were being unfair, and et cetera. Last point on this before we run to a quick break here.
I would only say that I just don't think it's fair that anyone, let alone a person of Mr. Gantt's standing in his community, walk away from a property like this. The mowing the lawn was purely symbolic, okay? I mean, I didn't hire a professional landscaping company to do this. I did it myself to make a point. And I just don't have any tolerance, and I don't think anybody should, for anyone who walks away from a property, whether they live in California and, you know, thought they'd buy a house for a song here and that it'd be easy to turn around, or someone like Mr. Gantt. I just don't have the tolerance for it, and I wish that there was less tolerance for it among other residents of our greater Rochester area.
And many residents, believe me, do not like this at all.
Okay, well, I'm going to do my best to steer the rest of the hour. Look, listeners, you can call and talk about what you want to talk about. We're also talking about zombie properties, which Del Smith is here to talk about that. He's not here to talk about David Gantt, and he's been doing that. And you hear that Lovely Warren is one of 16 mayors who signed on to this bill. We'll have to see where it goes in the state legislature. They've got about a week left of session to decide if they want to pass it. And that would put the heat on banks and lenders to maintain these properties that haven't yet been foreclosed upon. We'll see where it goes. If you're waiting on the phone to talk, please stay there. We'll get you next immediately after the shortest break in radio. You're listening to member-supported public radio. Coming up in our second hour, we welcome investigative reporter Michael Isikoff. The journalist who broke the Clinton-Lewinsky affair has made a career of uncovering big stories. He'll talk about the modern state of American journalism and what reporters can do to earn the public trust. Michael Isikoff of The Washington Post, Newsweek, NBC News, and more, next hour on Connections.
Opening this week at the Little Theater, from acclaimed director Pavel Pawlikowski comes Ida, a moving and intimate drama about a young nun in 1960s Poland who, on the verge of taking her vows, makes a shocking discovery about her past. In this film, Pawlikowski returns to his native Poland for the first time in his career to confront some of the more contentious issues in the history of his birthplace. Powerfully written and eloquently shot, Ida is one of the best foreign language films we've shown this year. See details at thelittle.org.
All right, welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. If you're just joining us, we're joined this hour by Del Smith, the City of Rochester's Commissioner of the Department of Neighborhood and Business Development. Mary Coffey is with the North Winton Village Association. Dave Andriotta is a name you've seen in the Democrat and Chronicle as a reporter, but now a columnist. His second column already generated a lot of feedback, and Dave, but you're going to stay a reporter as well, right? You're going to kind of wear two hats there.
Yeah, I'm going to wear two hats. We're trying something new over there. It's a little bit out of our comfort zone, but so far I've been having some fun with it. I think every reporter, no matter how objectively he or she looks at a story, everyone has an opinion on something, and I'm happy to get the opportunity to spout off every once in a while on Sundays, which is when the column will appear.
And you can see it on the Democrat and Chronicle online if you have a subscription, and also in, again, on Sundays, as Dave said here. Let's get back to the phones. We've got Gene in Rochester. Go ahead, Gene.
Yes, thanks for taking the call. Aside from this whole thing with, you know, David Gantt and the racial issue, we have problems in Rochester, and I live in the city. We have abandoned houses and foreclosed houses, but we also have large numbers of homeless people. There are groups like Take Back the Land, which simply go to these houses. They enter them without permission. They rehab the houses, and they move homeless people in, sometimes the very people that were foreclosed in the first place, and the properties are no longer abandoned. Yet the banks and often the city and the police will come and harass and try their level best to move these people out and evict them, make it abandoned again. I think the idea is a good idea. I just wonder what you folks think.
We'll start with Del. Del, quick thoughts on that?
Sure. So the first point I'll make is that, you know, as a city and as officials, we have to carry out city ordinances and codes and laws. So, you know, we unfortunately don't have the opportunity to just turn our back on a situation that we know it happens to be illegal or unlawful, and much of what is being discussed falls within that category. However, there's a however here. I think what we can do as a city is to be very innovative and creative in some of these approaches to some of our problems. Look, we do not have enough resources, and by that I mean money or people or even time, to combat the problem at hand, the blighted properties. I mean, if we took the price tag at what it takes to renovate these properties, it would be astronomical. So we have to be very strategic in our way that we approach these things, and we also have to be innovative and creative. And so what Gene's talking about, any aspect of that is not illegal or unlawful, I'd be willing to entertain how we might be able to make good use of these properties. But we just can't throw resources at it to solve the problem.
What do you think, Mary?
Yeah, I think anything that can be turned around and made into a useful situation would be good, but I agree with Del. He's got to go by the rules and regs, and, you know, it's certainly, and I know Del would look into it. Anyway, we can turn something around and make it into a better situation, then let's go for it.
Mary, you sound more optimistic than I've heard you in a while in working with the city administration.
I haven't. They're new. I haven't had as many fights with them.
Are you saying you will? Or are you saying you hope you won't?
It isn't a fight. It's sometimes we'll just say, hey, you know, difference of opinions. But I don't know. I've met Del. I asked Del at a meeting. Poor Del walked into his first meeting and the whole room exploded. Mm-hmm. And I first of all, on code, because they felt that their service centers weren't doing the code, and second, they wanted more police from the service centers. So here's Del, brand new. And I said, Del, I want you to look, I just said to him, because if I walk down and look at this area, just look at this area, that a lot of money's been put into and go look. I heard from somebody the next week he was down there walking, looking at that area. And I thought, this guy listens.
Is that easy? You just got to listen.
That's all you got to do.
Well, let me kind of chime in on what Mary is saying. And I so appreciate Mary. And I think what we probably recognize here is a very valuable relationship. You know, the city needs individuals like Mary to want to take ownership, who wants to fight for seeing improvements in their city. And our orientation with this administration and with this department, with this mayor, is not one of combativeness. It's one of saying, let's listen. And clearly the conflict is there, but we work through it and we can figure out creative solutions. So empowering residents, empowering the communities to say to the city, listen, you're here to serve us. This is what we want. We need to respond, and within the boundaries that we have to operate in, find good solutions to make it happen. So I think there's a mutual appreciation there that Mary and I have for each other and the work that we do. And at the end of the day, we're both working towards the same goal.
We'll get back to the phones in a second here. We'll tell you that if the legislature ultimately passes the bill we've been talking about, the abandoned property bill or the zombie property bill, the Attorney General's office would be tasked with maintaining a list of vacant properties in New York. Realty Track, which is a private real estate tracker, has estimated New York State has 15,000 zombie properties. The Attorney General, Eric Schneiderman, has said he thinks the actual number is higher. There's no final number, whether it's statewide or here in Rochester. Certain estimates have been roughly around 1,000 zombie properties in Rochester, with one bank alone, with several hundred. But again, we know there are a lot of them, and we'll see what happens in Albany. Let's get Julie in Brighton. Thanks for calling, Julie.
Hi. I am a representative from Take Back the Land. I've been quite active with them. And so I really appreciate this discussion. I think it's wonderful. I want to bring up one other issue, however, related to that, is that the best way to avoid zombie properties is to keep people in their homes. Mm. And that is what Take Back the Land is mostly working on, thanks, Gene. There has been a background of taking over abandoned houses, but that's not what we're primarily working on. We're trying to help people stay in their homes. And at this point, I think where the city can help most, those zombie properties are terrible. However, the best way to prevent them is to keep people from leaving their homes in the first place. And so where the city can be helping out is by working on a moratorium on foreclosures by banks in the city. Take Back the Land has been asking for that for years, because so many of the homeowners in our city are in homes and are losing their homes because of illegal tactics by banks, and by banks who took advantage of people of color and people with low incomes, and those people now are losing their homes, and those are our future empty homes and our future zombie homes. And so what we need to be doing is preventing those people from losing their homes. And one way of doing it is to say, hey, banks, unless you can prove that this is truly a legal activity, you can't do it. And the other thing is code violations by the city. As we've learned, Gant's home has had very few code violations, whereas there are people in neighborhoods in our city that whose homes have been inundated with code violations and with probably less issues than Gant's home had. And what happens is once they can't pay those code violations, they get the violation fees get doubled and tripled, mm-hmm. and then they get added on to their tax bills, and then they can't pay their tax bills. You've got another empty home. So what I'm calling for is more of an investigation into how to keep people in their homes rather than losing them.
Thanks for the call, Julia. Let's start with Del. What do you think, Del?
You know, I was kind of waiting for this topic to come up because at the end of the day, the city does not want to see someone out of their home. They do not want to see a vacant home. And we can talk about holding financial institutions accountable after it happens, or we can talk about even trying to change the process to not allow banks to do it so easily. But if you go even kind of more upstream, what you want to do is address the economic situation that is forcing someone to be in a situation, for the most part, where they are abandoning their home. And, of course, you know, this administration is focused on education, safety, and economic development as those pillars. And we can think of each one of those three could cause someone to say, I want to leave a particular region or an area. And so at the end of the day, if we can create jobs and we can have people with well-paying jobs that can live in a neighborhood where they feel like they're safe and they know their kids are getting a decent education, I think that lessens the chance of having vacant properties.
What about a moratorium on foreclosure?
Well, you know, you're talking about an action that the city could not, I mean, the city could advocate for, but clearly it's not within our rights to create such a moratorium. But, you know, if the state level wants to push for something like that, but again, a moratorium on foreclosures might impact the short-term symptoms of abandoned properties, but it doesn't go to increasing the economic opportunity for individuals to stay in their home once that moratorium is lifted.
I know Mary wanted to jump in as well. Go ahead, Mary.
We have to be aware, too, a lot of our city homes are owned by landlords, the renters in our
right.
city homes. So one must be aware of that, and a lot of them, not a lot, and some of them are wonderful, but we can't address them all as small business in Rochester and treat them all the same when some are good and some are bad. And a lot of, not a lot, but there are investors from out of town that don't even have a personal interest in Rochester but making money. So we have to look at, you know, it isn't so much private people who own their homes being, you know, out. And that does happen. But in Rochester, it's a lot of landlords. And some are very good. But the city has to go bad after the bad landlords. And as far as code violations go, yeah, we have to start right away before we have a disintegrated mess. And I'm sure, Del, if we have homes with our service centers, they should be looking if they have a person who has deteriorating, that perhaps there are, can be funding to help a person with not that much money to help them fix their house so it doesn't deteriorate to the point it's torn down.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thanks. Go ahead.
Can I add another thing?
Sure. Go ahead, Julie.
Yeah. Regarding investors, that is absolutely true. And like David Gant, who was an investor, a lot of the people who, companies who are, or the houses that are now suffering from tax violations and are being taken over by American tax funding, I have investigated in this past, the majority of them are actually investors. So, however, to say that the houses then suffer because of these investors, no, it's the people who are living in the houses who they were, these houses had landlords, and the people who are living and renting in these homes are being also sent out of their homes. So that is, again, a matter of, yes, investors are hurting everybody, not just the homes themselves.
Right.
The other thing is, when we talk about income, yes, that is important. It's so important. That's why this all has to go hand in hand. But there are a lot of senior citizens who are being now kicked out of their homes, and it's not a matter of income for them. It's a matter of the person who, the organization that owns the home, the city. Everyone needs to work together to keep people in their homes. And the other thing is, as far as moratorium on foreclosures by banks, the city, if it cannot reinforce that, can enforce a moratorium on evictions. And by instructing the city, the judges, that as long as the banks and the issue of foreclosures by banks is not settled, there will be no evictions. That is another tactic that can be taken.
All right, Julie, thank you very much. Del, moratorium on evictions?
I'm not sure, but I wrote it down on my pad here, so I'm going to go back and do some research and see if this is a tool that we can add to our.
And as long as the house is livable.
Okay. Our entire board is lit up. I'm going to try to get to as many calls as we can in our remaining time. Keith, go ahead, Keith.
I have an interesting show. A couple of things. I've spoken to Mr. Gant before on other issues, and as far as I can tell by talking to him, he's a very tall man with broad shoulders, and he doesn't really need people to call in and defend him, but what he needs to do is call in and address the issue that was brought up in the newspaper report. And what the reporter did in the paper is quite common. He exaggerated the obvious just to make a point. The point being that he's a politician
who let this house go. His color of his skin is irrelevant. However, I would have loved to have seen the reporter about 10 years ago doing stories on member items when that was quite popular within the state. And the one that always got me was the one that Senator Alisi arranged for St. John Fisher. I think it was $100,000, $150,000 of state money, which is taxpayers' money, to give to St. John Fisher, which is a private college. And now the building, or when it was all said and done, the building got his name on it. So I thought it was pretty good.
Well, thanks, Keith. I appreciate that. Dave Andreotta wasn't working here 10 years ago when member items were at their peak.
Ten years ago, I was working in New York City. I was reporting for a paper at the time called the New York Sun, which is no longer in business. I was reporting on City Hall, New York City Hall, and I would encourage the caller to try to look up some of those clips and punch in my name and Lulu's, which is a common term for member items.
I did an annual pork report 10 years ago for 13 Wham.
So it's been done, just not here locally by me.
Dave's taken the blunt of this, and I just want to say thank you, Dave, for opening this door and for the Democrat and Chronicle finally standing up and taking a stand on trying to turn this city around. So thank you to you and the Democrat and Chronicle and WXXI.
All right, thanks for reading.
And let's grab another call. Mike in Rochester. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, Dave, I enjoy reading your brother's work out of Buffalo News. And I'm glad that a Democratic politician did get a stir, because it's tired of hearing just about the Republicans. But a show that you could do is Rochester Housing Authority. The city of Rochester is one of the largest landlords, and that would be another whole show about how many properties that the city actually manages as Rochester Housing Authority.
Well, actually, thank you very much. I'm not aware of a brother in Buffalo. If there is a long-lost brother, I would love to hear from him. On the issue of the Rochester Housing Authority, it's interesting that you brought that up. Several years ago, I believe it was in 2010, I actually did a series of stories on management at the Rochester Housing Authority that ultimately ended in the executive director and his deputy, I forget his exact title, losing their jobs there. They essentially started a second company unbeknownst to the board that was approved by the board, but I think also the larger topic of boards, you know, sort of being absentee and not really paying attention to what they're doing. I'll let the clips on that speak for itself. But I appreciate the suggestion. And I want to note, too, that the Rochester Housing Authority is not the city of Rochester. They are separate entities. The city of Rochester appoints, I believe the mayor appoints 5 of the 7 board members and the other 2 members are elected. But they are separate entities. They're often confused, much like the Monroe County Water Authority or the Monroe County Airport Authority. These things are separate entities. Sometimes they're a fine line, but they are separate.
All right. Sherry in Rochester. Go ahead, Sherry.
Hi. I am a homeowner in Rochester, and there's a house 3 doors down from me that has been vacant for 3 years.
Does its lawn need a mowing?
No.
Okay.
Be careful, Dave.
Good job. No, it looks good. That's not the problem. So I've tried to buy this house. I actually hired a lawyer who got a hold of the bank that had the house. They sent me back an estimate for like $75,000. The house is probably worth around $30,000 to $35,000. So here I want to buy the house. It's on my street. I'm invested, and my hands are tied, and I can't do anything. And the house is still vacant. And so I think it's just another example of the banks aren't necessarily working with us. Here I tried and got nowhere. So I'm not quite sure if the city has any ability to work with the banks that own homes, but
go ahead, Del.
New York City someplace.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Go ahead, Del.
One of the things that I appreciate from this discussion about zombie properties is that the city has been trying for the past few years to get the banks to the table to talk about how we can best approach these properties, zombie properties, as well as the opportunity that Sherry's talking about as well. And we haven't been very successful with getting the banks there. We believe that this discussion will kind of provide us with a little bit more opportunity to get them to the table. And so while the key for us to be able to work with the banks, because they control a lot of this process, right? If the bank owns the home, there's only so much that the city can do. And so we really need the banks working with us, and that's what we hope will happen from this news coverage.
About 30 seconds. Go ahead, Alexa in Irondequoit.
I just want to go back to this issue with landlords and code compliance in the city. As a social worker doing home visiting in the inner city, I see so many homes where people are suffering in these houses with just blatant code violations, where landlords are receiving so much housing assistance income with these properties, and I'm just not understanding how this continues to cycle, how these people are able to get multiple C of O's on properties with so many houses that are non-compliant.
Well, our challenge, Alexis, is that we can issue code violations on these homes. Ultimately, it has to go to the courts for the court to make an action that will allow us to take possession of these homes. And frankly, our court systems are so backed up that, you know, we have a case where we are trying to get an action on a particular home, and it is taking months for the courts to be able to decide on that. So we can flood the pipeline with more code violations, and then you get to a situation where people will start to believe that a code violation really doesn't mean anything because we're not going to be able to move on it. So I hear her concern, and of course any place where you believe there's a code violation, I encourage you to contact the city. We are going to move on it, but we have to be careful of just thinking that code violations and code enforcement is going to be the answer.
10 seconds, Mary. Go.
I absolutely agree, and we're supposed to be taking care of our poor, our less fortunate, and we aren't. We are, and I absolutely agree what you're saying. They're not living in good living conditions. Some are, but many are not. So, yes, by conscience, we've got to do what is right.
Mary, from the North Winton Village Association, thank you for being here. Del Smith, City of Rochester, thanks for your time, Del. Dave Andriotta, I think people are talking about your work already. We can read you on Sundays and certainly throughout the week as a reporter. Thank you for taking the time as well.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Michael Isikoff, investigative journalist, in studio next for the hour on Connections.